quality matters in the long run. So the quality of educational content we create will matter. And that signal over time, you know, will be valuable and hopefully get discovered. And so you want to keep the content stream relevant and credible and useful and all those things.
Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, fractional go-to-market executive in the Bay Area.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a high-tech marketer in the Silicon Valley. Each week, Steve and I come together to talk about all things marketing in the world of high-tech.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on our experience early stage technology startups. We talk about where we've succeeded, where we failed, what we learned. And every once in a while, we'll also be inviting our CMO friends and other marketing colleagues onto the show to, you know, learn from their experiences and their wisdom and impart some wisdom along the way on our podcast journey here. Peter, what is going on in your world, brother?
In my world, well, interesting times at work. We were shipping a product that was getting good traction. And, you know, we're in the world of technical support, but because the company I work at, it's AI driven. And we work on like the harder problems, the tier two plus type stuff. But in my world, because we have a bunch of PhDs and professors on the team, they wanted to work on the hardest things. And so interestingly, what that's done is it's pulling us into new use cases inside of a company. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of beyond technical support. We're already doing, for example, like if there's an incident in a company and a major outage, we can do all the investigation. You know, we can read logs and telemetry for anybody in this world. It's like really cool advanced stuff. But as we started releasing new features and taking a step back, it's pulled our company into a new use case and therefore a new product. So basically customers using our stuff are saying, hey, your stuff does even more than what we, you know, would normally use it for. Can it also do this? And so now we're building out and launching a new product. I wouldn't call it a pivot, but it is we're going to have both products, but we can tell that the newer application of our technology is probably to be more the future of the company, if that makes sense. And so for me as a marketer, what it's causing is for me to redo the messaging, the positioning. So like this might be interesting for the audience. You know, when you start out early stage company or on a one product company, which most startups are, you're making one product. You know, the positioning is really, and all the messaging and all that's really just about what pain are you solving for whom and how and why is it better or different? And you kind of like just try to be very clear on the website. And that's what you're trying to do. The moment you become a two product company and those two products may be adjacent, but not heavy overlap, mm-hmm. you have to then rethink the story of the company and how those two products can coexist under. It's like, I think about it as two people standing under the same umbrella. and so, you know, my point is I'm having to rethink how we position the company and its brand and what it does. And then there's a question of like, okay, I have one product and I now have a second one. Do I really have a platform with two products? So now are there three things I have to describe?
Yeah, I went through this at a robotics company I was working at where we had this robot that was going around the facility, but because I had cameras all over it, it could do security as well. But to have the robot all of a sudden move from the very hardcore positioning we had it in to, oh, it can do this as well. And it can do this as well. And it became more of like a moving mobile hardware software platform for a facility, not just a robot that would do X. And when you're early stage, you really do want to say, this is technical. So it's a real challenge for a marketer.
Well, and you don't want to lose, you know, the truth is the product we have is good and we're building a lot of revenue around it. So we don't want to lose the current appeal to who we're targeting.
Your initial audience. Yeah.
I mean, I think in yours, I think your robot was more of an industrial cleaning, right? It could clean airports, it could bleed. Yeah. So, you know, maybe in that world, I would just call it like sentry mode. By the way, it's going all over the place. You can turn on sentry mode and have it also like monitor anything unusual. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, I think that I'll just finish this off because it is a fascinating problem. Like, we've had the conversation of like, do we give each equal weight? Like, you come to the web page and it's like, we have two products, and you kind of have a traffic splitter, like one and two, and you go to respective landing pages. Or do we actually just describe the new one almost like the old one never existed? And then that probably seems too extreme. So then we just give it a mention because it changes the headline, you know, like it changes, like totally. When you land, it's like, instead of like, you know, AI support engineer is what we're called. It's like, now it's like, hey, you know, incident management, you know, it's like lightning fast incident management, evidence-based, whatever, whatever, which is a different, it's a different team who has a different like sense of urgency and so on. So it's actually quite, it's a bit harder than I thought it would be. Like, and I guess all I'm saying is like, we talk about a lot of things in general here and, you know, we'll say, oh yeah, I've done this, I've done that. It's really a trade-off of this. But I am reminded that like when I'm doing it, trying to come up with alternative A and alternative B and all that, it is extremely, it's murky and it's hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Our topic today, Peter, is an oldie but a goodie, nets versus spears for B2B marketers, when you go wide, when you focus in. However, we're putting, obviously, the AI aspect onto this classic conundrum. Do you do traditional lead gen? Do you do ABM programs? When do you tackle it? And, you know, given AI, what's happening with buyers now, especially younger ones who are way more digital native than, you know, buyers even 10, 5 years ago were. And then, you know, what does this mean for your campaigns? What does this mean for content production? It's an old theme, but it's made new again due to the changing buyer landscape and these AI tools that they're using to try to get business today.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic because I think there's a new variable or a new dimension to a pretty classic challenge. So I think that some people might listen to this and think, oh yeah, it's about long-term trust and awareness versus, I don't know, short-term conversion and attribution or whatever, like, you know, brand versus performance marketing.
Right.
And I think there's definitely an aspect of that, you know, like, do I do TV ads or do I do direct mail? You know, do I do a billboard or do I do targeted email campaigns, whatever, like that kind of like broad broadcast versus very narrowly targeted. But I think the challenges now that we have to deal with include like a compressed sales cycle with invisible buyers. You know, buyers are self-educating.
Exactly.
And they're shortlisting before you ever see them. So like there's a group of people deciding whether or not they should put you on the, you know, consideration list or not before you ever know they exist.
Right.
We have obviously have all this AI driven marketing activity, right? Like it's so much easier to spin up content and there's a flood of content. And so measuring the brand probably feels a lot harder and performance feels easier somehow because at least you see the downstream conversions. I'm in a startup, so there's always pressure for building the pipeline fast. But if we're in a downturn economy, which it sort of feels mixed, and you're saying a VC-backed company like mine, there's always pressure for pipeline. So then you get more challenges around like, am I building the brand versus building performance and how am I even seeing that? And so on. And even the attribution models, like there's a flood of companies out there who are, we talked about it last week about generative engine optimization, GEO, people discovering your product by putting a question into an LLM like ChatGPT or Gemini or something, and your answer pops up. Your company gets cited.
You want to be in that summary, in that answer. Right. Well, and, you know, thanks to our crack content team, we've got some really cool stats here. So 80% of marketers report that ABM has a higher ROI. Okay, that I don't think that would surprise anybody. Gartner says that by this year, end of this year, 80% of all B2B sales interactions are digital, right? And it's basically being driven by millennials who are more digital native, engaging with these AIs. They're much further along in the customer journey because of all these tools. 44% of millennial buyers avoid sales reps entirely. They'd prefer to self-educate online. So when they come to your website, their intent is probably going to be way, way stronger than it was in the past. Do you think that's fair?
I think so. I mean, as I'm thinking about this, it becomes a game of trying to make sure your company is present in these upstream decision and educational right. steps people are taking. You know, in the SaaS world, it used to be a very cool new thing, G2, when it just came out. It actually had a longer name. I can't remember the name, but now it's just G2. But it was, it's a review site, and the reviews are pretty well curated, meaning like real people have to answer a certain number of questions. And so basically right. it's a more reputable review community for products. Trust Radius is another one. The question becomes, what are the sources people go to make up their mind in various ways? For example, if you have a high versus low involvement purchase decision to make, and like a classic one is I'm buying a car, and it's like, okay, well, like, how do you figure out what car to buy? So sometimes you ask friends and family about it. Like, that going to show up? Is that going to show up in some kind of like marketing attribution if you're working at Ford or some company like that? It's like probably not. So what are all those places people would go? You know, in tech, it might be Reddit. It might be Hacker News. It might be Product Hunt. It might be G2 and Trust Radius. It might be, asking colleagues at other companies. It might be going to a meetup. I don't know. Like some people buy the billboard on 101. If you're not in the Bay Area, 101 is a major famous freeway, and it runs right down a major part of where a lot of tech companies are.
And that's the... you know, the vanity metrics, right? Which good segue here, where in this new landscape, measuring MQLs and SQLs and the acceleration of those between different stages of the funnel, maybe not so good a way to look at the world anymore, right? You know, 75% of leads never convert, right? According to Forrester. Yep. Only 27% that do get through our funnels as the marketing guys are sales ready at first call. So maybe the better way to look at this is focus on all these things we've talked about, you know, the quality long content, deeper think pieces that drive customers to look at your company and engage with it and react way better with the AI crawlers and use those to help gauge what pipeline is and isn't doing. And, you know, again, it goes back to the old, let's build the brand, right? Let's create awareness so that when the intent is there, we're going to use a farming analogy. We've, you know, tilled the soil, right? So that when the seeds fall, it's ready to grow and we can harvest it. I don't know how far I can take this metaphor. So it's all those things. Yeah. And I've said this many times about what I see you doing at your company. And I think you're doing this right. I think it makes a lot of sense. You're just cranking out a lot of very deep, high quality content. You're not just blasting a bunch of Google AdWords.
Yeah, but I don't know how broadly it's being distributed. It's funny because as I'm really feeling this particular episode, we just had a board meeting for the company I'm at, Run LLM, if anyone's following or cares to know. I'm not trying to advertise the company, but it's a good real example of, as I happen to be going through a lot of these topics myself, and it's early stage, so I don't have a big team. It's me and the CEO and the board thinking about stuff. At my company, we write up a pretty nice report, like a state of the nation, where we are, what the goals were last time we met, what we've done to progress. So we do a nice write-up. And in that, our company has started to become, is getting pulled up market is the term. Most companies want, and just that means you're, instead of selling to SMB, small and medium businesses, you're selling to mid-market size or enterprise size. And what that means is you have fewer customers, but each pays a lot more. Everybody wants that because it's way more efficient. On the other hand, like doing a sale to a big complex organization is very time consuming and jumping through a lot of hoops. So, you know, jury's out, but most companies want that over the long run. They want to go up market. We're getting pulled up market, which means larger companies seem to be interested in what we have sooner than I would have expected. Again, when you're a small company that doesn't have a ton of awareness built and brand and trust, like you're not a known quantity. But in that report I wrote up before this episode, we even conceived of it, I put in two stats. One is over 80% of buyers shortlist before they do formal outreach. Like they know the 3 to 5 vendors that might satisfy their procurement requirements. Like they know what they want to buy. It's always best if a buyer has defined their requirements legitimately, not just some RFP, but really knows the problem they're solving, frankly. The other one is of the customers that you finally start to talk to, they're 70% of the way through the journey already, meaning they've probably evaluated, educated, shortlisted. You're either on the list or you're not. And then 80% of those, let's say they have a list of 3 or 4, have a preferred vendor already. That's between like Sixth Sense did this survey. And I think it just reinforces or maybe just re-describes what you've been saying, which is by the time you're talking to a potential buyer, they've already done a ton of homework and they already have a favorite. The flip side of that is if you aren't known to them, and you, even if you outreach and you just say, I'm going to make a list of the top 100 companies I want to call and just hit them, like just reach out, do cold outbound, do whatever. The truth is, like, you have a very low percentage chance of winning. You have a low percentage chance of winning because they've already made the short list and they're not familiar with you. So therefore you're not on the short list. And for you to disrupt that process is very hard. So my point is, it becomes extremely difficult if you're not known and you're not popping up somehow in this process companies go through to self-educate themselves about what they're going to buy next. And so the reason I'm feeling this is like, I am a small company that's not that well known. And I know these stats and I'm like, ugh, you know, like, well, what do I do to still win? We have a great product. We have a great team building something really valuable and useful. Like I truly believe a lot of companies using us would benefit a tremendous amount. So it's my job to try to get that going. That seems very hard. It's a hard problem. I think the word I come to, I kind of want to ask you like what you think about it, but I'll say the one word that comes to my mind about how to maybe shortcut this is educate. Like if we could publish a lot of educational materials, then we intercept that potential buyer early in their process. So I think the word, I keep thinking educate. How do I educate them? How do I become part of that step?
And again, that kind of content is way more consumable by the AI crawlers, right? And increases your chances of you appearing in the answer. I'm just curious how you think this integrates or vis-a-vis account-based marketing efforts, right? So if you're doing the net, you know, and then, but you find kind of like the bigger fish or, you know, the bespoke accounts that you're going to be working closely with the sales team to produce content and whatnot for, you know, how does this fit in with that dynamic? I'm not sure it's much different than anything we've done in the past for those kind of programs. But it would seem to me that if your netcasting initiatives are going to change due to, again, the buyers being much more digitally native, doing a way bunch more homework up front and not wanting to talk to a human until much further down the customer journey, you know, how that affects what you do in terms of ABM, because let's say you're just focused on the US at first as a US based tech startup. And you break the country into 3 regions. I'm just making this up.
Yeah.
And you've got 10 you know, 10 on the West Coast, 10 in the Midwest, 10 on the East Coast. And these are companies that you want to do targeted, you know, campaigns around by keywords and their zip codes. You know, you understand the buyers, you know, the personalities, because you're using all these sophisticated databases to find out who they are and what they do within the company. And you're doing, I don't know if you've ever used Sendo or any of those gift services, but you know,
oh yeah, once we did
chocolates and
I sort of, I kind of like, just as a quick aside, I love sort of the zig when other people zag idea. Like, I'm old enough now. I used to work at a Foot, Cone and Belding advertising as an intern.
That's great.
When I was an undergrad. Yeah. It was a great gig. We had Levi's. It was in Levi's Strauss Plaza in San Francisco. We had Levi's as a client. We had Clorox as a client. We had Nissan as a client. It was a big deal company. Now it's just called Foot Cone, for those who know. Uh-huh. And they had a group called FCB Direct. And one of the Brad Bag lunches was a creative director showed us all the really fantastic mailed pieces they were going to send. I mean, beautiful production. Like still get them in the, you still get them in the mail. Sometimes you get like a beautiful, like custom looking brochure from like a high end car company or something, you know, it's a Ritz-Carlton ish feeling deal. And I love the idea of standing out, you know, and reaching a group like that. You know, you have to come up with something very compelling, whatever that means for that audience. But I love reaching them in that different way. That's kind of like, and there's noise everywhere else, but then here you might get a shot at really making a pretty cool impression. I still love the idea of direct mail, something tangible. And I don't know, it's just me. Let me get us back on track, because you're asking about ABM and maybe how do you, if I can interpret the question, it was like, hey, how do you build trust in a brand and awareness early in, say, a customer journey? Like, how do you get in the head of that potential buyer super early? Because that's what you need to do. But then how do you layer in like a highly targeted approach like ABM, which probably feels more performance-ish? Is that kind of the tension you're playing with?
Yeah, I think that's a great
insight. Here's how I'm thinking about it. You know, the rules of engagement, and I'll bring this into the ABM question because it all segues. The rules of engagement or the things, the thought process and theory that you go through is the same. It's like, who is my audience? What do they care about? What do I communicate with them, to them? What do I get them to, what do I need to do, or how do I move them to take the next step in, you know, whatever I want them to learn about or contact us or buy or whatever. And so to me, that comes back to the idea of education. If I think about quote unquote ABM, I think about, okay, I need to take a set of people and I have to deeply understand their pain points, their problems, their aspirations, and I need to generate content around the things that are going to answer the most important questions they have. And then from an ABM standpoint, the distribution of that might be different.
I think this leads to the next thought, is that those types of interactions matter more now than just looking at your raw metrics, right? Our MQLs, our SQLs, acceleration between funnel stages, you know, getting rid of, you know, blockages in funnel stages. I think that because we've got, you know, this whole millennial generation who's, they don't want to talk to an SDR until much further down the line, when, as we said, their intent is much greater and they're actually coming to you. Like you said, they've kind of decided these are the three guys I want to talk to now.
Yeah.
What you're describing in terms of building that kind of content, sharing brand, et cetera, are going to become much more critical to look at. And I'm not saying I know what the measurement is or what the, you know, the metrics are and what you would look at, but I think just these traditional kind of raw numbers of, how's everything moving? How many are coming in? How many are going out? It would seem to me that all that's going to become less relevant. And what's going to become more relevant is when this, you know, younger, more digitally connected buyer comes knocking on the door with greater intent, way greater knowledge now, because of the content you've produced and you've fed into the AI crawlers, you know, how do you measure that, and what's that going to mean? So I think that, again, this is all just coming from the tectonic changes that the AI chatbots are bringing to the forefront is how to use that. If these buyers have done all this research, they haven't spoken to anybody, and yet they're further down the customer journey, how do you organize around getting them in the door? And it seems kind of a mixture of nets versus spears, and they feed off each other versus, you know, one or the other. And this means that, you know, the AI slop, as they call it, just tons
noise.
Of very superficial, crappy stuff that a marketing team could be cranking out to do the SEO thing. It's just, it's not good, and it's not going to matter either.
There's a few things in there. I think when SEO was new, when Google was new, there was a lot of graft and gamesmanship and, you know, like tilting, you know, like, you know, people like gaming a system. And you know, you could argue that if you don't show up digitally in search results, for example, then, you know, your product may as well not exist. So on the one hand, it's like, well, I want to make sure I'm not bumped out of being discovered, whether it's, you know,
right,
GEO or SEO. And on the one hand. On the other hand, there is this belief I have that I think most people who do this seriously for a long time also believe, which is quality matters in the long run. So the quality of educational content we create will matter. And that signal over time will be valuable and hopefully get discovered. And so you want to keep the content stream relevant and credible and useful and all those things. And that ABM style thing I was talking about is a targeted approach, but a ton of traffic, this invisible set of buyers who's digital native, they're, you know, I can't reach all of them. And a lot of them are going to be discovering us still on Google search and still, and increasingly on, you know, Claude and ChatGPT and Gemini and so forth. So how do I show up there? And that is a big question right now. I've been kind of keeping an eye on SEO versus GEO, and it is, you know, if you know that people are educating themselves and that's where they're doing it, you want to insert yourself there. So I don't know how to do that. I don't think anybody does. I think that there are rules of thumb that people are out there teaching you, and you can go to a webinar and you can read a paper. And I don't know how much I trust it, you know, but if you kind of go through, like, that's your more brand building, broad discoverability effort, you know, instead
exactly.
of that, yeah. that you still have to cover that. I still have to have the broader net, if you will, if we're using the metaphor from today's episode, I have to have that net working at the same time I have the spear phishing going on with ABM. I'm just still trying to figure out, like, for example, you know, I think we talked about this last episode, but just the quick summary is there's a way to the length and a structure of the content you create, and the credibility of it, maybe the citations of it and so on, that you need to probably pay attention to, just like how Google indexes, you know, how LLMs might want to ingest data and how that they might want those information structured.
Yeah.
And it is a question that marketers have. You know, I reported to the board, but I'm keeping an eye on it, that we believe that good content is still the number, you know, we still need to, like, do the hard stuff, which is understanding your customer well and giving them what they really need in terms of education and insight and being trustworthy and credible and not too salesy. We still need to do all that stuff, and we still need to figure out how to get it to them. But I don't know if the world is all LLM or the world is all, SEO or a mix or what. One could be displacing the other, you know, the disruptive nature of LLMs against search and so on. So there's all that. But like, if I look at a couple stats here, Google says that when you do brand and performance together, whatever brand and performance is today, so I'll keep it broad on purpose.
Sure.
Your ROI will be 35% better if you do a combination. Right. And the other one, Binet and Fields said that the optimal mix for B2B anyway is 60% brand and 40% demand. So you're still doing both. I think the game today with so much disruptive technology and AI noise and slop is that how do you execute an effective brand campaign and at the same time, demand campaign.
I did want to say something though about metrics, then, what you do use if you're not doing, like, kind of the raw ones. And, you know, I think it kind of comes down to customer acquisition costs. You know, those kind of metrics are probably going to be way more reflective of your success with this new mixed approach of the brand pieces and the high quality content versus the performance marketing programs. And then, you know, also brand equity measurement. And we've all used those various tools that, you know, they scan the interwebs, right? They look at what's happening on social media and websites to kind of give you some kind of brand number that you can look at. Again, there's got to be dozens of these companies and they all have their different approach. But those are probably way better metrics to judge marketing's success in this new world of, you know, GEO. And I'm not saying you lose the old metrics of, again, MQLs, SQLs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's going to be those metrics further down the pipeline that are going to give a much more accurate picture of how the marketing team is performing.
I still think that the ones for digital brand awareness and visibility, I mean, it's still website traffic, it's still branded search volume, social media reach and mentions. I'm not using, though, like a Sprout Social or something to measure it. I do use Google Search Console, which shows the traffic, the impressions that my brand is generating through search results. So that's good. So I can clock that improvement over time, and that would be a trustworthy source. I'm not looking at the social piece. You know, in PR is so different today, basically obliterated. I think it's very hard to do PR, which I've always had as a major part of my marketing mix, and have not only had a lot of success in it, and I don't mean that in a light way. I am a PR machine. And I really mean that. So anyone, anyone wants to know, just ask me and I'll show you what I mean. But what I'm finding that it's almost impossible to do now. Like I say that kind of being funny, on the one hand,
but
doing it to contrast where I am today as a person who loves it and has found it very effective. When I look at like share of voice, or earned media and backlinks, you know, like how much press coverage am I having in the category? Right. How much of it is me? The quality of that mention, how high, which sort is it? The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Economist, Bloomberg, like what outlet am I showing up in, and how like focused is that on me and my company or whatever? Like, I'm not even doing any of that because I can't, you know, there's just no tech reporting left really. I mean, yes, there are, but it's very fragmented and very little compared to 10 years ago. So I think that, you know, tech trade can only really cover the biggest companies right now or the hottest stories. And they're only able to cover a very small fraction of what's happening. So that's why you see, in contrast, companies putting out their own content as well, because the channels to distribute your own content over LinkedIn, Instagram, you know, wherever your company is operating, you know, X, you can still push your own content out.
Right.
And that's one way to reach a mass.
And certainly as marketing professionals, that's always kind of been the dream, you know, to get rid of the gatekeepers and to be able to communicate our pure message straight to our audiences.
I still think it's a content heavy approach that you have to take today in a world where you can control distributing your own content in theory directly to the audience who cares. So then it's like, all right, the quality of that content, the resonance of that content truly matters. And you got to do a good job with that. And then, you know, you got to.
And it's not that we haven't been doing this for the past 10, 15 years. I think, again, it's just the coming of age of the millennials and the Gen Zs. They live on their phones now. And 15 years ago, people didn't live on their phones the way they do now.
Yes, they live on their phones, but I'm not doing a ton of mobile. And you know, with respect to the GEO type thing, or AEO, depending on what you call it, but LLM stuff popping up in those answers, you know, there are a bunch of companies out there, and every once in a while I'll get an email and it's like, hey, you know, what's your brand voice on LLMs? And I'll put in my URL and it'll come back and say nothing. I don't expect me to have a lot right now. And also, I don't know that people are asking questions about my topic. Anytime I think about SEO and I talk to anybody, I know many experts in the field. Funnily enough, when I talk to three or four experts, they all go, huh, hey, so if someone would be looking for your product, what question, or your type of product, what question do you think they'd ask? Because they're all getting back to what people are going to put in the search engine or the LLM. It's all about interpreting the question people are asking mm-hmm. to see if you should be showing up in the answer, and then trying to, over time, get certain, if you're on SEO, get certain keywords, mm-hmm. you know, organic keywords to rank in SERPs or over here. And, you know, so how do you do that? Great content, high quality backlinks. How do you do it over in the LLMs? Well, we think it's giving the right kind of authoritative content that those engines pull from the LLMs and will therefore display in the answer with citations like that. It's like, okay, well, what to me, both of those just require really good on-brand content, you know?
Right. Yep. Excellent. Why don't we wrap up, Peter? This has been a very good discussion. Do you want to read us out?
We want to thank you, our audience, for listening. Our editors, Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peakbound Studio and Brian Douglas at the Creative Commonwealth, for making us sound and look great. Our marketing maven, Ian Robinson-Lambert, for getting the word out. Julianne Bornales for being our consulting producer. Renita Datta for driving our marketing research and content calendar. And of course, Thomas Moyer, president of the AMA San Francisco chapter, for presenting this podcast. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Workbox, for their support of Misadventures in Marketing.